Peter Edlund's office has four wheels and gets about 40 miles to the gallon. As construction analyst for Central Vermont Community Action, Edlund oversees the work of rebuilding homes around the state damaged by Irene. He spends much of each day in his car.
So we're in Moortown. This is downtown Moortown.
Edlund says looks can be deceiving when you drive through a village like Moortown, which was underwater a year ago. Some of the handsome old houses that line the road only look lived in.
But you'll see, we've got four houses in a row here that are gutted on the inside. Nobody's living in them. And that's a typical example of how people don't realize that there's so much work to be done yet.
Work on one of those houses is nearly complete.
I haven't been in here since forever. How are you?
It's lovely in here, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
A freshly installed hardwood floor leads through the house to a back porch that looks out over the Mad River. Volunteer Liz Harris is a Moortown resident helping with the final touches of paint. Harris remembers how the house looked after Irene.
The house was dark, filled with mud. The basement was scary. I mean scary.
Now, after being renovated from the foundation up, the place is a sparkling, well-lit example of a successful Irene recovery project.
It's gorgeous. Everybody in town wants to move into this house now.
But alongside those success stories are some sobering examples of the work that lies ahead. Asa Rowell has seen them firsthand. Rowell chairs the Mad River Long-Term Recovery Group. Going door to door, her group has discovered people who are still without drinkable water and functioning septic systems.
It's pretty unbelievable that people have gone a year without a septic or without a well. They got help initially, and it wasn't enough. And then they just don't know where to go from there.
Rowell says many of these individuals have limited resources and live in isolated locations. Construction manager Peter Edlund acknowledges it can be hard to believe people have gone so long without basic necessities.
You know, my eyes are open to poverty and people with little means. And, you know, it might be an issue of not understanding what services are available to them. I don't know.
In the wake of Irene, hundreds of unskilled volunteers helped with the cleanup. But now that the work has turned to rebuilding, skilled volunteers are in demand. The work is being done by Vermonters and teams from out-of-state organizations, often faith-based groups. Edlund says there's a big need for businesses that can provide expertise and materials for the recovery effort.
You know, we have projects we're ready to work on, but we don't have materials, and we're challenged to find them.
About 75 reconstruction projects are underway right now, but the Vermont Long-Term Recovery Group says hundreds of people need some kind of help. Edlund's job runs for another year, and as this construction season winds down, he's already planning projects for the spring. He says as much as possible, the projects are making homes more floodproof by elevating them, installing floodgates in basements, and using materials that can withstand a good soaking.
Where we can and where we can afford, you rebuild with resiliency.
That word, resiliency, has crept into many conversations about Irene. It's about taking the lessons of the past to create better ways of dealing with the future. The approach to recovery that's being used in Vermont is one example. Case managers are in the field working one-on-one with disaster victims, and construction coordinators like Edlund oversee the rebuilding. That model was created after Hurricane Katrina, and Vermont is only the second state to use it. Resiliency also applies to towns hit by the storm. George Hamilton is president of the Institute for Sustainable Communities, which is partnering with the state on a project called Resilient Vermont. The idea is that each community has learned lessons from Irene. Hamilton's job will be to bring them together, to share those lessons, talk with people who have studied disaster recovery, and come up with policies and goals for the future.
You've got to take stock of what worked well and what didn't. You've got to bring in the experts and take advantage of the assets that you have. And you've got to develop a plan of action that gets you better prepared for next time.
Resiliency often comes with a price tag, whether it's money for bigger culverts or expanding a town's business space. Waterbury is one Vermont community that got busy right after Irene, mapping out what it would take to be more resilient in the future. The process started with a series of community meetings. Then a plan was created that stresses themes like energy efficiency, affordable housing, and recreation. At a meeting in May, organizers pitched their ideas to potential investors. Bill Shepeluk is Waterbury's municipal manager.
There's a real desire to look at this as an opportunity, how we can shape our future and how we can point ourselves in a direction that 10, 15 years down the road, we'll have reinvented ourselves and Waterbury will be a model for other communities who unfortunately might have to suffer some devastation like this.
Resiliency also has a statewide dimension. Vermont is encouraging towns to adopt bylaws that would keep development away from areas along rivers where erosion from floods is likely to cause damage. And resiliency is starting to enter into the discussion about how farms can cope with future storms. Even in places where Irene didn't wash away farmland or carry crops downstream, the floodwater has contained contaminants that rendered crops worthless. Stuart Comstock Gay is president and CEO of the Vermont Community Foundation. He says we're only beginning to formulate the questions about how to make farms more resilient.
Do we need to change farming practices more fundamentally? And that's a question that we're getting a lot. You know, after the floods, the water on the ground was considered toxic in many places. And what do we do if every time there's a flood, it's toxic water? Historically, floods replenish the land. And if they're not replenishing the land but poisoning it, we've got a much bigger challenge. And I think folks are just barely scratching the surface of that question.
Given Vermont's geography and nature's power, there are limits to what can be done. But with climate change and the threat of more violent weather, Irene Recovery is about getting people back in their homes and being prepared for the next big storm. I'm Steve Zind in Braintree, Vermont.